back to yet another episode of Panditri on a Pint. We are two blokes continuing our above average football conversation. Oh shit, it's cricket. Ha! I made the mistake again.
We ended the last episode by saying that we're football fans, we're gonna go back to football, and here we are.
Yeah. That's got to do a lot with United's shambolic performances and India's amazing performances.
Yes.
Which has changed my sport allegiance for, I think, 2-3 weeks more, and then I will go back to my basics, to my roots.
It's not even that. It's just a coping mechanism, bro. It's just like we can ignore the dark side, you know, and we can just be happy with what's going on in the World Cup.
Show me the light. But yeah, World Cup, the last time we recorded was just on the eve of the World Cup. Oh no, few matches had been played, right?
Two matches had been played. Yeah.
Yeah, two matches had been played, and now we are well and truly in the stretches of the tournament. I think top four pretty much decided, but we'll cover all of that in this episode. And we're just going to go through the way the teams have played and the standout picks for us and what we could see at the eve of the tournament. Let's start off, I think, with one of the most surprising performances by any team in any competition. And it's being touted as possibly the worst World Cup defense for any sport,
man,
which is England's England's defense for their title. Two white ball titles, T20 and the Cricket World Cup in 4 years. They've been one of those teams that have been the forefront of, you know, revolutionizing the game. But they've come to India and looks like they've just forgotten to hold the bat.
Yeah. It's been really bad, dude. I mean, the thing is that nobody could have predicted this. And nobody even did predict this. No one came to this tournament saying that there are doubts over this English team. And the real lack of quality with the bat, the lack of application. I mean, they have been so bad. It's not even like they had bad luck in a few games or anything like that. They have genuinely been the worst team in the tournament. They have been worse than Bangladesh. They have been worse than Netherlands. It's really amazing to think that this white ball team, because as you said, this white ball team has, it will go down in history as one of the best white ball teams we've seen, right? And it's not like it's a very old team, or it's not like they've got too much young blood into this team. It's legit pretty much the same team, right? Which has won that last World Cup. But they just look a shadow of their former selves. It's when all of your batsmen are out of form, it's a very rare thing. But when that happens in a major tournament like this, it just looks ugly, man. And it has been a very, very, very ugly tournament for England. They just don't seem to be able to create any sort of partnership, create any sort of pressure. They're a side which likes to be aggressive, like to play on the front foot and attack teams. And in this tournament, it's not worked even once for even one batsman across the 6 games they've played so far.
You know how they say that cricket is so much about your flow and your confidence and your form? You can actually see it with this English team, because I think Virat Kohli had said this in one of the interviews, or with when he was talking to like the Nepali team and just giving them like advice. He's like, once you reach a certain level of competitiveness, the skill amongst all is almost the same.
Right.
Very minimal difference in skill. But where it actually counts is your mentality, your fitness, your mindset, how you're going about doing your everyday things. And the purely case down to confidence. And you can see this English team is just devoid of even an ounce of confidence.
Yeah.
They look scared when they come out to bat. And it's so sad to see it happen just at the brink of the World Cup. I mean, if it happens, say, like what happened to Australia in that South Africa and India series.
Yeah.
Where they look short of confidence, but they managed to turn it around at the World Cup.
Yeah.
But for England, it started within when they were 1-2 games already played. And then there's not much that you can do, because I feel in this kind of tournament, if you lose 2-3 games on the trot, then you have fallen way behind the pack.
Dude, they what their highest score is, I think 210 in the last four games of cricket they've played. It's insane.
And that came against like a dead rubber to South Africa, right? No, South Africa was like 170 all out.
Yeah, South Africa is 170. I think it was the match before that which was 210. But whatever, I mean, that's the point. Like, the bowling has been great either. Like, it's not... They did well against India on a track which favored bowlers. But it's almost like we can't even get there because of how bad the batting has been, right? And it's... There are a lot of questions now which are going to come up after the tournament. Actually, they've already been coming up, but... England had a disaster. They're not a very good World Cup team. Apart from the World Cup which they've won, they've not a very consistent World Cup performing team. But probably one of the worst World Cups they've had before this was 2015. And they came out of that tournament with the right attitude and decided, hey, we're going to reset our cricket. We're going to reset the way the game is played in our country. And that is what led to this legendary group of players, right? Do they have the appetite for a similar reset even now? Because considering, you know, the way the English cricket board was kind of looking at this World Cup, they played the 100 tournament recently. I think in August is when it got over. Yeah. The English cricket team has not really played a lot of white ball cricket. And even when they do, this core group of players has not really played together much, almost for the last 3 years, in fact. So,
yeah.
You know, there are issues there from like coming from the board and the planning, you know, committee. But is that appetite there to do what they did in 2015? That's a big question. And the second big question is, what is their squad going to look like in the T20 World Cup, which is coming next year, right? Those are two big questions coming out of this debacle.
When your best players and your most experienced players come out and make statements within the tournament while you're still playing, I think it's a big sign of worry, because Joe Root came out and said that we don't even know if this format is relevant anymore. And he literally has a World Cup game the next day to play. And he's talking about the relevance of the format that he's playing. That's one. Second, Johnny Bairstow coming out and talking about that run out, that infamous run out in the Ashes, and bringing it up now again. So, I don't know if this is like a mechanism to deflect the conversation to something else or what kind of excuse it is, but it doesn't look good on the team when your most experienced players are coming out and not addressing the major concern, which is definitely their batting and their temperament especially, to play out the difficult phases of the game, which England just did not find a way to do and crumbled under the pressure each and every time against each and every team.
Yeah.
Which brings us to your question, Akshat, like what are they going to do after this mess is over, this nightmare is over, when one of your most experienced legendary players is coming out and talking about the relevance of the tournament? Are they going to just say that, okay, we do not feel that it is in our best interest to invest time and money into this format anymore and just let it go off the hook?
Yeah, I mean... The thing is that winning solves everything. If England have had won 5 out of 6 games, Joe Root would not be questioning the relevance of this tournament, right? It's just that, kind of mentality which is there within that squad right now, where obviously things are not right. They're focusing on the wrong things. It's a very difficult situation, but it's also going to be really interesting as a cricket fan to see whether they can bounce back from this or they are going to have to, revitalize that squad with new players.
And it's also good because none of these games are going to be dead rubber anymore, because ICC just announced that top 7 plus Pakistan will be playing in the Champions Trophy and England are sitting rock bottom of the table. So can you imagine a Champions Trophy without England?
Fuck yeah, bro. I'd love it.
Something to cheer for then.
I mean, more than that, I just want Netherlands to qualify somehow, bro. Like that is my aim.
We'll come to Netherlands and their deceiving tactics, as Akshat had mentioned before, to me personally, but we'll bring it up on the pod. But any closing points on England? I just feel like when we had spoken about them in our previous episode, we said that the bowling lacks a little bit of bite, and that might come to haunt them in the middle overs where they're not picking up wickets, but it's just been the total opposite. I mean, the bowling has been bad, but it's not been as abhorrent as the batting.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, if they're in such a bad spot that if their batting was performing, we would have come on this episode and said that, you know what, their bowling's not good enough. But it's just that the badness of their batting has overshadowed the badness of their bowling. So, yeah, that's where we are right now.
And we'll be... very interesting to see if Matthew Mott and Jos Buttler remain in their respective positions, because this screams out for a administrative and captain change, right? Like, when something like this happens.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So, England have how many more games to go? I think it's not going to get easier for them, because they're playing Australia, they're playing Pakistan, and I think they're playing Netherlands to finish off.
Yeah, they're playing Australia first, then Netherlands, then Pakistan. Yeah, I mean, look, if they have to qualify, they need to win at least two out of these three. And the way they're playing right now, all three
qualify
games...
for Champions Trophy, you mean?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, Champions Trophy. So, yeah, I mean, that none of these three games are going to be easy for them, to be honest. Like, the way they're playing right now. So,
yeah. Okay. Bad days for England. Let's move ahead. Do you want to talk about Australia now?
Sure.
We spoke about Australia after the first two games, and we'd mentioned that they were unlucky because they had probably the hardest two games to start off with, which is how it's turned out looking at the points table. They played India and they played South Africa. Got decimated by South Africa. But we also mentioned that Australia are a team that do very well when their backs are against their wall. It's sort of like a never back down attitude, and they come out swinging, and they've done that. And you know, those are the only two games that they lost. They won four on the trot. Their opening pair is looking more and more devastating every day, especially with the comeback of Travis Head. Warner has been in sensational form, man. Like,
yeah,
he's just been so consistent in this wide ball format for since however long he's played. He's 413 runs in 6 matches. He's averaging about 68. Strike rate of 112. He's been at it this tournament. And things looking good for Australia. I mean, they have a decent run-in to finish off. And I'm pretty sure they'll be comfortably in the top 4.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think Australia are the finished deal yet, because their middle order hasn't really got going this tournament. There have been a few patches where someone's scoring like a 50, a 60 or a 70, but their runs have really come from their opening pair, which is Marsh and Warner. And
but don't forget that Maxwell innings, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Don't forget the Maxwell contribution.
Maxwell's like that, right? Like, once he catches fire, it's done, right? Like, you can't do anything about it. But it's very... you don't know when that's going to happen, right? You don't know when it's his day.
Yeah.
So I think they probably will want to see a little bit more from that middle order going forward. But again, I mean, when your openers are putting up these mammoth stands against New Zealand and Pakistan, that you're going to be in a winning position for the rest of the game. That's for sure, right? But for me, I remember in the first episode, I'd mentioned that it's not rocket science. You need your lead spinner to be amazing if you're playing any tournament in India. And the first two games which Australia lost, Adam Zampa had picked up one wicket in both games. He had a shocker against India and the next game as well. And the four games following that, he's been sensational. He's the leading wicket taker of the entire tournament. I think maybe Shaheen has overtaken him, but he's there, top three.
Yeah, but
for
they're on level points. They're on level wickets.
Right.
Shaheen is ahead because of his economy.
Yeah. So,
but Zampa has played a game lesser.
Yeah. So I mean, that's pretty much it. I mean, he is that important to this team. He is, in my eyes, the most important player in that Australian team, and him bowling this well gives them a chance, because I don't think their other bowlers have been that good. Stark has been surprisingly, you know, off it. He's always dangerous, like that's just Mitchell Stark, but he hasn't been to up to his usual standards. But it's just, you know, the fact that their openers are performing and dominating so well, plus Adam Zampa, Glenn Maxwell has bowled well. They're getting these few performances from some of their star players, which is really pushing them through, and they've come back really strong this tournament. Beating New Zealand in a tight game like that would be a huge confidence boost for them as well.
And you have to, if you look at the games that Australia have played, and there were phases, and it's important to note that they've won the crucial phases of the match, which have given them those points. For example, Sri Lanka had gotten off to a flyer. I think they were like 130 for one or something like that. And I think Nisanka and Kushal Mendes were out there, and they were playing really, really well.
Yeah.
Dominating the Australian bowlers, but Australia pulled it back in the middle and restricted
Zampa show.
Sri Lanka, yeah, the Zampa show. They restricted Sri Lanka to what, like 200, 215 runs, something like that.
Yeah,
and Australia could chase that down fairly comfortably.
Yep.
Yeah, fairly comfortably. So that's one that was on the back of two losses. So it could have easily been shoulder dropping, you know, let them continue leaking the runs, not showing any sort of fight. It could have easily gone the other way, but it didn't. And that's one important phase that they won. And even against Pakistan, I think Pakistan were stitching good partnerships while they were batting, plus Australia's lower middle order sort of lost gas at the end of their innings.
Yeah.
They still got to a huge score, but it could have been chased down with the way Pakistan were playing and the way that pitch was playing particularly, but they got important wickets and they held on to their catches in crucial moments.
Yeah.
And against New Zealand, it was just a roller coaster right throughout, man. I mean, what a great game of cricket. It was scored almost 800 runs on that pitch. You had a set Rachin Ravindra and a set Daryl Mitchell, and they kept picking up wickets at the right intervals. And that's what I love about ODI cricket. It's never really done in a space of 4 or 5 overs like how you'd have in a T20 match where the game can completely go away from you. And they found ways to just plug back. So this team is showing a lot of fight, a lot of character. Not very consistent in all of their performances, but when you have a group of 3 or 4 players, key players who are stepping up and are being consistent over and over again, I think it's enough. Contributions and chip-ins from everyone else are enough to tide you through.
Yep, I agree.
Australia finish off with England, Afghanistan, Bangladesh. Should be comfortable for them, the last two games especially. Probably England is the easiest game, but we don't know which England side ever turns up anywhere. And we could see Australia finishing probably second on this table is what I would say. Which player has impressed you the most from this Aussie team?
I mean, I know I've spoken a lot about Zampa, so I'm going to choose Warner because, man, that guy just knows how to bat in India. He's the perfect Indian opening batsman, if that makes sense, because he loves pace on the ball. In India, you'd want to really maximize the power play before the ball gets old and starts turning and it's difficult to hit fours when the field is spread out. And he has that aggression in the first 10 overs, which gets you off to a really great start. And once you get set in, if there aren't any demons on the pitch, you can go and make massive, massive totals. And Warner just fits that mold of an opener so well. So him being in form is a huge, huge, you know, difference maker. I think it's quite fair to say that they won the game against New Zealand and the game against Pakistan because purely because of that opening partnership. Because like you said, their middle order tends to lose steam and they don't end up getting as big a total as they probably looked like they were getting early in the innings.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, if he stays in form, he's someone who can just take the game away from you in just 15 overs.
But you got to realize that as much as we've said about Australians batting, they have hit more than 350 in their past three games in a row.
So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
And when you have, for me, it's Maxwell. I'd said that he's going to be my X factor. And man, when he's in song, I don't think there are many people who can stop him, especially on smaller grounds like that one that we saw, I think Dharamshala, right, against Netherlands, where he just absolutely swept them away. There was nothing you could do. Took the game away from them in like 5 overs. In yeah. 5 overs, he'd already had his 100.
Yeah.
Massive performance. And against New Zealand, a good cameo as well. So if he can fire in that lower middle order and just give Australia that final push after their strong opening and middle order pair, they are going to be a very, very, very tough team to beat.
Yep, agreed.
Let's move ahead. Let's talk about New Zealand, who are sitting third on the table. Now, we spoke about tournament dynamics, right, in our last episode. Like, you are allowed to lose 2 or 3 games. Depends on where you want to lose it. Australia lost the first 2 games, have come out swinging after that, 1-4 on a trot. Now, New Zealand find themselves in a position where they've lost 2 games against 2 good teams.
And played well in both games. That's the key.
And played well in both games, yeah.
Yeah.
Played well in both games. But today, as we are recording, they're going to be facing South Africa, which is another mammoth game for them.
Yeah.
If they lose that, they're on 3 losses in a row, and they come up against Pakistan in Bangalore on Saturday.
Yeah.
Where it almost becomes like a must-win now situation for them, because if they lose that as well, Pakistan and New Zealand are on same points. So, I mean, they played, I think, after India, some of the best cricket that we've seen consistently over the space of 6 games. But now they've lost 2 in a row. So where do you put them, Akshat?
So I would be more scared for them if they had got thrashed against Australia and India. But it's like you said, they've been performing really consistently. Like, even the 2 matches they lost, they played well. They actually played a really good game in both games. So, that's the thing, right? Like you said, it's tournament dynamics, because they find themselves in this precarious position where they've probably been the second best team in the tournament. It's really strange. But I think they'll still do well. They've been great across the board. The injury and return of Kane Williamson, and then again injury of Kane Williamson, has kind of disrupted them, I feel. But their batting has shown up. Devin Conway, maybe not so much, but Rachin Ravindra is a fucking revelation, man. Wow, what a super fucking talent that guy is. Absolutely insane.
Yeah.
So Daryl Mitchell has done really well. Santner has been outstanding bowling. Again, I mean, like, the best teams will have a spinner who is performing at the top level. And the New Zealand is no exception over here. They're getting, you know, good spells in from Glenn Phillips, who was, again, incredible against Australia.
They're managing to find 10 overs. They're getting 10 overs out of Glenn Phillips, which is huge.
Huge, huge deal.
When you consider the... Yeah, when you consider where you're playing and how the pitches are.
Yeah.
If you have a batsman who can give you 10 overs.
Yep.
That really strengthens the team.
Yeah. So, I mean, I look at New Zealand and I really don't see anything to worry about, or anything where I can change my opinion compared to the last episode yet. And yet is the key word, because things can change very quickly in cricket. Like, you know, against South Africa, if South Africa bat first and Quinton de Kock is in his mood, then they lose that game and then they're suddenly in a very bad position. But I don't know. I think they've been consistent enough. They've played well, and I definitely see them qualifying in the top 4 for the semifinals in this tournament.
Okay, nice. South Africa, New Zealand have to play. South Africa today, Pakistan on Saturday, and Sri Lanka finally.
Yeah.
And you'd expect them to at least get the win out of Sri Lanka. And from the way the table is looking right now, I think 10 points should be enough to qualify.
Could be enough, yep.
But talking about just the general talent in this New Zealand team, as you said, Rachin Ravindra, what a fucking find he has been.
Incredible.
I can totally see a 12 crore IPL contract coming in the auction this season.
If it's RCB, it's like 18 crore. Like, we don't know. Yeah. No moderation, bro. Spend all of your money and then, like, bank on Harshal Patel to get, like, 15 wickets in the tournament.
But One thing I want to mention about this New Zealand team is that I really like Tom Latham's captaincy. I think he's been very calm and composed in the way he's gone about doing things. His bowling changes have been good. He might not have fired with the bat as much as you would expect him to, but I mean, that entire team has so many contributions all across the board that it sort of gets it gets nullified. But I think his captaincy has been good, considering they lost their key player, their best batsman by far, and the captain.
Yeah.
New Zealand don't look like a team that were worrying too much about the Williamson injury.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, let's move ahead. We have since New Zealand playing South Africa today, why don't we talk about South Africa? We said that they are the team that's come in with the hottest form and probably the most destructive batting lineup in our previous episode, and we've seen that all across the tournament. I don't think there's been a batting lineup as good, as destructive as this, because they can, like, each and every one of them can really take the game away from you very, very quickly. De Kock has had a splendid tournament. He's leading the run scoring charts. He's been absolutely amazing. Then you have massive contributions from Markram. I think he's hit 2 centuries already, right? In this tournament, you have Henrik Claassen, who's just been in at his belligerent best. The only thing is maybe Rassie van der Dusen and Themba Bavuma's form, but I don't think you can fault anything in that South African batting order currently, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's like they have taken up the mantle of the English white ball team because this is how England play, right? It's they've come to terms with the fact that we are going to be aggressive. This style of cricket is going to make us win 8 games and lose 2 games, and we're okay with that. We will not change the way we play. That is their mindset. They're not going to be the team which looks at a low total and like, hey, we can play this out, we can win comfortably within 45 overs. No, they have one gear and they will play to that gear only. And this kind of stuff only works if your entire team is on board and your entire team plays that style of cricket. But as you said, for South Africa, it just fits perfectly. Their bowlers are fast and aggressive, their batting is aggressive. Their fielding is also like really, really good. So it just fits. I mean, it's a very, very well-oiled, well-drilled machine right now. You saw that against Pakistan as well, right? They could have made that a comfortable run chase. Any one of their middle order batsmen could have just taken it slow and made it very comfortable. But they didn't do that. They all of them decided that we're gonna play aggressive, and they eked it out in the end, which, I mean, probably they could have not, but they will have no regrets, you know. Even if they lost that game, they would have been like, no, this is how we play. And they've come to peace with that, you know. And it's great seeing a team like that, because those are the teams which perform well in tournament format, you know. South Africa, definite semi-finalists, and looking very dangerous on their day. They let's see. I mean, I still think the semi-final choke is coming, but yeah, let's see how it pans out.
I just want to bring up that I mean, as good as we've seen them bat this tournament, I want to see them chase again and chase against a good bowling lineup, because the only time that they've looked uncomfortable, and I mean very, very uncomfortable, is when they were chasing. They lost to Netherlands, which was a shock. I think probably the biggest shock of the tournament, even more than England's capitulation. And against Pakistan, they looked very shaky, could have easily lost that match if it wasn't for the LBW appeal that was clipping the stumps, and the umpire thought
That
the batsman
was
edged it, so gave it not out.
my God,
And then it went on to umpire's call. Yeah, that was heartbreaking because that
yeah,
looked very, very straight
it looked out,
onto the stumps
it looked so
from yeah,
out.
it looked out. Yeah, and the Empire thought it edged it.
Just to add to your point, I think their bowling lineup has looked very good this tournament because the batsmen put up such huge totals which they have to defend, And like the other team has no choice but to go out and start playing attacking shots and not really having time to settle in because the fucking required run rate's 7.5 before a ball is faced, right? So I think that is also another factor where, let's say they don't get the 350 plus score, let's say they get the 250 score or 260 score. Is their bowling good enough to contain that, where batsmen are not looking to go after them? That's probably another question which hasn't been asked this tournament.
Yeah. And in regards to their bowling, when they're bowling first, I think Netherlands were 112 for 6. And they ended up scoring, 245 for 8. So it was something that was explicitly brought up by Temba Bavuma, saying that we just gave it away. And I would want to see, when they're facing a stronger side, who are going to take full advantage of this opportunity of not finishing the game off with the ball in the first innings at least, how that plays out.
Yep.
Yeah, so South Africa, again, very interesting. I definitely think there's a semi-final choke coming, especially if they end up chasing in the semi-finals and don't chase at all before that.
Yeah.
Maybe if they have a game where they're chasing before they reach the semis, they could build up some level of confidence and it could get better. But I really think that this team chasing is not a very strong side, to be honest.
Yeah. And the next two games, today's game against New Zealand and then they play India, the two toughest, I'd say, games you can play in the tournament, are coming up next. So probably we'll learn more about this team in during the next two games and, you know, what their chances are of actually lifting the trophy.
Yeah. Let's move ahead. I want to talk about Pakistan. There's so much right and so much wrong with this team all at once. I don't know. Whenever Pakistan come in for a tournament, there's only one word that resonates with me, which is chaotic. Like, everything seems chaotic about them. They are bored, the Pakistan cricket board. The way Babar captains the team, the way they field, the way they throw, the way they bat, everything is chaotic. And if they can find a way to control that chaos, they become a really, really strong side.
Yeah.
As we saw, I think, against Bangladesh yesterday, where they played some of the best cricket that they've played in the tournament. Excellent with the opening spell. Shaheen Afridi came back and picked wickets up in the middle. They closed out the Bangladesh innings well. Batting came out with it intent, scored quickly, realized that, hey, this could be a chance to get our run rate better. Went for it, got the job done. And Pakistan as a team are always that team that do well in adversity, and nobody understands why. Like, it's when they are absolutely down and out and there's no hope left, they somehow revive themselves like a phoenix and give the viewers a great end to the tournament at least. Like, they'll go out with a bang whether they qualify or not. I hope that they make this top four battle interesting, and I think they will, just knowing the track record of Pakistan.
Yeah, I think the problem with Pakistan is consistency, like bringing order to the chaos, like you said, right? Because when they get things together, they look like a good team. They're this team where some games their batting has performed well and their bowling hasn't backed it up. And some games their bowling has performed well, but their batting hasn't backed it up. And their fielding is always all over the place. But when they get everything together, they are a very decent ODI side. And the problem is, in this format, you don't have time to get it together, right? You don't have an easy group stage where you can like take one loss and then beat some two easy teams and then go to the next stage of the tournament. You have to be at it constantly. Yeah. And that is where they have struggled, right? And the thing about them is, it kind of all comes down to that one game in Bangalore against New Zealand. So if New Zealand lose against South Africa, which is a big if today, then maybe, yeah, Pakistan are in with a shout and they have to beat New Zealand then, which is again a very difficult task. Then we can start talking
about by a good margin.
Yeah, run rate.
By a good margin, because NRR counts.
Correct. So yeah, but I mean, coming back to like individual performances this tournament, Babar Azam has been really good. He's been that steady, you know, influence within that middle order where he's consistently getting runs. There have been lots of people talking about his run. His
yeah, but
strike
he's not
rate.
Made a he's not made a big contribution yet. I mean, he's always gotten off to starts, but
yeah,
after that 50 mark, he just fails to deliver.
No, I get that he's not converting that into a big score, but he's still their highest run getter in the tournament by some margin. And people are talking about his strike rate and things like that, but you need someone who's going to be there in during the middle overs. And I think he's played that role quite well. Of course, he could be a lot better against spin, but I don't know. I don't see him as a problem. When it comes to bowling, again, very inconsistent. There are days when Shaheen Afridi is Shaheen Afridi, the one which we know is so talented, and he comes out and just bowls incredible spells. And there are days when him and Rauf so off it. Like, Rauf will give like 18, 20 runs in his first over only, and then they're just playing catch-up rest of the innings, right? They did that, I think he did that like two or three games in a row. He did that against India, did that against Australia, and then against Sri Lanka also, if I'm not mistaken. He did something not that great. So, it's like so inconsistent. It's so chaotic, like you said. I don't think they
But between Harris Rauf and Shaheen Afridi, they have 28 wickets in this tournament.
Yeah, but they normally like take wickets together, like they play well together, you know. It's like if it's an off day for one of them, both of them will have off days. It's like, they need to be consistent, and I for one think it's too late in the tournament for them to bring that back. Great game against South Africa. They lost a close game. There's no shame in that. They performed really, really well that game. And great game against Bangladesh as well. If they can take that forward, we could be looking at, as you said, one of those comeback stories in the World Cup. But I don't know. I still don't think they're consistent enough to put in those kind of performances every single game.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a lot that's been said about, the Pakistan board. After the loss to South Africa, the chairman came out and said that we gave too much freedom to the coach and Babar.
That's horrible.
And from next time onwards, we're going to take some more control. I mean, I don't get that. Like, the politics are one thing, but to publicly come out and, like, air your dirty laundry and almost shrug off all responsibility, saying that, hey, you know, this is not us. We left it to them and they did this shit show, so don't blame us on it. That's not good to see.
It's shocking. It's absolutely shocking.
Yeah, and I feel for the players, man. Like, they come out and they want to express themselves. They want to play in front of the big crowds. But somehow this Pakistan team just keeps getting flack wherever they go.
I think when you're such a cricket-crazy nation like how India are, right? 1 billion people have like 1 billion opinions. It's like that, right? And I think that is kind of the discourse in Pakistan as well. To the board, like, fine, okay, you don't want to take responsibility, be like that. Why the fuck are you saying that in the middle of the tournament, man? Just say it after the tournament. Don't say anything at all. That's also better. But it's politics, man. That's all it is. It's people who haven't done their job, who are now trying to stay in their job by, you know, distancing themselves away from what could be a bad situation for them. It's really horrible. It's a lack of leadership. Leadership starts with accountability. And this Pakistan board just has no sense of accountability or responsibility. It's really bad. It's really, really bad. You handle this stuff internally. If there are problems like this, you do it internally. You don't do it externally without consulting the management of the team or the captain in the middle of the tournament. It's really bad. It just shows, you know, probably what has gone wrong for Pakistan even coming into this tournament, because the organization, similar to, you know, the English cricket board, the organization from the very top has been lacking. And that does reflect in the tournament as well.
And, you know, when Pakistan came in, they were ICC ranking number one. And a lot of people said that don't take it by face value because it's so skewed, because they've played Zimbabwe, they've played, UAE for a tournament. They've played the New Zealand C team, because most of the New Zealand players were playing the IPL at that time. Yeah, they've built up this ranking by playing not so great teams. And I think Dinesh Karthik put it the best, like that's the best way to describe Pakistan right now, is that the longer the format, the more opportunities they have to come in their own way. Like they fuck it up for themselves that badly. But when it's a shorter format like a T20, they're a really good T20 side because they don't have time to trip over themselves.
Yeah.
Whereas in ODI and Test, they do.
Yeah.
And you know, we heard Nasser Hussain saying on air that collapse that only Pakistan can generate.
Yeah.
And Dinesh Karthik saying Pakistan doing Pakistan things. Which is like, you know what they're talking about, right? When they say something like that.
Dude, I just came up with the perfect analogy for Pakistan. They're Darwin Nunez, bro. Yeah. If he's one-on-one through on goal and he has time to think about the situation, he's going to fuck up. But if it's like a quick cross where it's like he has to just tap it in without like just reflexes, he'll do really well, bro. That's Pakistan.
If he has to put like his leg over his head.
Yeah, he'll do it.
And do like a pirouette. It's going in.
It's going in. They're the agent of chaos, bro. Like Darwin Nunez is. It's just perfect.
Yeah, I mean, I want to see Pakistan give it a shot at least in the semis. Let's see how that goes.
An India-Pakistan semi-final would fucking be, oh my god, bro.
Yeah, out of this world.
I'm salivating just thinking about it. God damn, that would be so big.
Jesha, in case you're listening to this podcast and you've just got the idea from us, which is highly possible, we want credit and 10% of your match fixing commission.
Yeah, like, or just give us 2% of all the money you're making in the black market by selling tickets, bro. We won't tell anyone.
Or just give us 2 tickets.
Enough said. And book the flights also, bro. Fucking flight tickets are insane because of World Cup. What is this? Can't even go on holiday these days.
Yeah, mad. That's what. let's move it and talk about our team.
Afghanistan.
Tournament.
Sorry, India. My bad.
I mean, we can talk about Afghanistan if you want.
What a team, bro. What a team, man. Oh, I've enjoyed seeing them play more than I've enjoyed seeing India play, bro. Can I say that?
Yeah.
What a team, dawg.
Yeah, that's true. And I love the way the fans have gotten behind Afghanistan for some reason. Like, we're treating them as our little kids who have come to, like, have a kick about.
Yeah, it's like, you know, when you're playing cricket and you're all, like, say, 15 years old and you have, like, a 10-year-old little brother who's coming and suddenly he starts hitting, like, 2 fours or 2 sixes in an over and everyone is backing him. It's like that, dude. I mean, I'm being condescending as hell, bro. They've played amazing cricket. They've really, like, they've shown up, bro. Like, they've earned the 3 wins they've had this tournament, and two of them are huge scalps in England and Pakistan. They deserve what they're getting. It's a really, really, really great tournament for them. And a tournament where everyone in that team is performing, which for me is surprising because they used to be the team where only few star players perform and they rely heavily on them. This tournament, not the case. I just have to give props to their captain, man. I think that guy, Shahidi, has been playing such amazing cricket in the middle overs when he comes on. Plays such responsible cricket. They're chasing most of the wins they're getting right now. Even when they're not chasing, actually. But like against Pakistan or Sri Lanka, when they're chasing, he just comes in and is that steadying captain knock, Virat Kohli type of innings where, chill, we got this kind of thing, you know. He has a batsman up top like Gurbaz.
Clinically chased down.
Very clinical. That's the word I was looking for.
Clinically,
And
both against Pakistan and Sri Lanka.
Yep, exactly. And Gurbaz has really made a name for himself in this tournament as that, again, that mold of opener who just performed well in India, that aggressive in the power play kind of opener. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
Their bowling has been outstanding. I just don't know what they're feeding their spinners, man. How they're producing these spinners in that country. It's unbelievable. I also want to shout out this one guy who I didn't even know who he was. There's this all-rounder called Azmatullah Omarzai, bro. Do you know of this guy?
Yeah, Azmatullah.
Bro.
Yeah.
Fucking cheat code player, bro.
What a player.
What is this? He's coming in, he can bowl 8 to 10 overs comfortably, picks up a few wickets, and in the middle order, again, totally unfazed, yeah. Part of this whole clinical run chase show which they're putting on. Great, bro. Like, fuck, what a team. What a team.
Really, really good team. Really refreshing to watch them. And what I like about them is that, you know, they're... even after they're winning, they're not really hyping themselves up. They're saying that, you know, there's a long way to go. See, again, in the last game against Sri Lanka, Gurbaz got out for a duck, which you would expect would have a very big impact on the way they chase it down. But then Ibrahim Zardan, Rehmat Shah, Shahidi, they played very smartly, right? They stitched together partnerships, and then Azmatullah just comes and hits that 73 and finishes it off.
Yep.
So they know how to stitch partnerships, which is very important in ODI cricket.
Yep.
They don't want that early wicket pressure to get to them. And what it shows me is that it shows me signs of maturity. Like, this team
100%
are serious about their cricket. They want to be in the game as much as possible, and they want to keep getting better every day. And even after the Sri Lanka game, their captain, Shahidi, came out and said that, you know, the next thing that we want is for one of our players to get their first international World Cup 100.
That's amazing.
Which I think is a huge statement to make after you won a game that clinically. They know that not their batsmen have all gotten off to starts, the top 5, top 6, but none of them have really gone and converted it into a big score, which is what they're looking at now.
Yeah.
Big win against England. Their bowling was fantastic that day. Rashid Khan was almost unplayable. Big win against Pakistan, where they chased down 282, and against that Pakistani lineup is a commendable performance. And what, 282 for 2? Pretty comfortable in that run chase.
Clinics, man. Clinics. Run chase clinics. They've performed so well. And to your point of them, you know, not hyping, getting hyped, because it's very easy. We're the underdogs. We've made a big scalp, and then just take it easy the rest of the tournament. And they're not like that. And for that, I'd like to give a huge shout out to Jonathan Trott, who's their head coach. Jadeja has come in as a consultant. I don't really know how big of a role he is playing. I'm sure, I mean, he's contributing as well. But, you know, that maturity comes from your leaders and from your coaching. So huge, huge shout out to him. He's done just a fantastic... I mean, bro, they had won 2 World Cup games total. And now they've won, what, 3 in the last 4, right? So... huge step up from this team.
Yeah.
Great tournament so far.
Yeah, and if we kept Pakistan still in the hunt, Afghanistan are well and truly in the hunt, because they're level points with Pakistan with a game played less.
Yeah.
And they're playing Netherlands next.
Yeah.
So now suddenly you have Afghanistan on 8 points with 2 games to play against Australia and South Africa.
Yeah.
If they manage to get a win from at least one of them,
yeah,
they are still well in the contention.
Yeah, it could get dicey. There's a lot of ifs in that. So we don't know how it'll turn out. But, you know, if you're in a situation where, let's say the last game in South Africa, where South Africa have already qualified, and you could expect at least India, South Africa to make changes in their final game or two if they've already qualified, then that is an opportunity, right, for Afghanistan to snatch another 2 points. I don't know. Let's see how it goes. I think the top 4, the way it is right now, it might end up finishing that way, but regardless, you know, whether they reach semis
most
or
likely
not,
yes, most
yeah.
likely
yeah.
But I just want to see like one or two teams try to make a go for it, you know,
yeah,
just so that the last games are not as dead rubber as it would have turned out to be.
No, I agree. This tournament kind of needs that. This format, I don't really like this format, because it could lead to this kind of situation where a lot of the games end up being dead rubber towards the end of the tournament.
Wait, format, you mean like the ODI format or the round robin format?
The format of the tournament. The group stage, round robin format. I don't really like it for this reason, because it could lead to a very exciting situation where there are four teams on the final game, they all need to win. But it could also lead to the situation where we're seeing where we're kind of certain, like not kind of, but let's say we're like 60% sure of all four teams are going to qualify, and then a few results here and there, and then you'll just become 100% certain. So it's sad for teams like Afghanistan, who have played so well, but they won't progress to, let's say, a quarterfinal match, right? They won't progress to a knockout stage.
Mm.
So that is what I don't like about this format. But again, like, I don't want to take anything, the limelight away from how good Afghanistan have been.
Yeah. Okay, let's move ahead. Let's talk about India. And let's talk about the things that we have done this tournament. Now, Akshat said that India are the favourites after the two games, and clearly looking like it now. We've just been outstanding in every aspect of the game, whether it's bowling up top, whether it's bowling in the middle, whether it's bowling in the depth, whether it's batting in the power play, whether it's batting in the middle, whether it's fielding, catching, everything has been sensational about this team. Different people stepping up at different times. King has played some amazing knocks to get us past the line on three occasions. Rohit Sharma is coming into
his tournament.
World Cup mode, where he's where he's just in God form and he can't do anything wrong. KL Rahul has been contributing really well with the bat, and even more so as a keeper on the field.
Yes.
And then you have Jasprit Bumrah, who's just, I think,
oh my God,
the greatest modern day bowlers. He will go down as one of the best modern day bowlers of all time, because just the kind of control that he has on where he's pitching the ball, and his ability to assess the conditions of where to pitch the ball, absolutely, is just outstanding.
That what you just said right there, that is the key. He is so intelligent. He, every time, it doesn't matter what pitch you're on, he will know whether to bowl 2 meters fuller or 2 meters more, you know, short of a length. He will know what line to bowl. Yeah. He will know that if this is not going to swing, I'm not even going to try and bowl it full and swing. If it's seeming a little bit, that's what he's going to do. If it's just straight, I'm going to bowl good line and length. I'm going to bring an LBW into play once in a while. It's just outstanding intellect in his bowling combined with incredible skill. It's very, very difficult to play him, because there are very few bowlers who are so good at taking wickets, but also have such a good economy rate. Because for fast bowlers especially, they need to take risks to take wickets. You need to bowl full, hope for the ball to swing. But if it doesn't swing, you get driven to four. If you are trying to get someone out LBW, you bowl it under the pads. If they read the ball, if it's a straight ball, they flick it for four, right?
Going down leg, yeah.
Yeah, so as a fast bowler, you take risks to take wickets, and that leads to a higher economy rate. Not for Bumrah. He has just so much control over what he's doing at all times. As a batsman, I just don't see how you play him. I just don't see it. You literally have to be like, okay, his 10 overs are unplayable. Let's just look somewhere else. It's that level of performance.
Let's just not lose our wicket.
Yeah. And even that is what batsmen have done, and that has not even worked. Because he's also, what, top 3 wicket takers, right? In the tournament right now. So, outstanding, man. Yeah. Like, in a team which has been performing incredibly, he has set himself apart. Him and Rohit Sharma have set themselves apart, even in this amazing, outstanding team.
Yeah, and just to drive my point of what I said when he learns how to read the pitch. So, if you remember, I think the best ball, hands down, this tournament has been Mohammad Rizwan's wicket, where he's come in and bowled an off-cutter. And it's pitched and spun in.
What a ball.
And the inspiration that he got for that ball was actually standing at mid-off and seeing Jadeja bowl and seeing where he's landing the ball and what kind of purchase that he's getting from the wicket. So, it's not like he is bowling and he is assessing the conditions. He is fielding, looking at how other bowlers are bowling and trying to execute the same skill as what Ravindra Jadeja would.
Yeah.
That is the level that we are talking about. And that ball was truly unplayable, man. Yeah. Like, it just pitched at the perfect spot.
I mean, exactly. And that again comes to that same point where it's intellect of being able to read the situation plus skill of bowling that out cutter so far outside off, getting it to cut and cut to the zone you want to hit as a fast bowler, which is the top of off stump. Like,
top of off stump, it's yeah.
It's just the combination of both those things, you know. He's incredible. And can we talk about, because we've spoken about the rest of the team in the first episode, there's one player who we didn't talk about, one player who I said that I want to see in the team just to see how that combination works. And my man, Mohammed Shami, bro. Is there...
He's just stormed this tournament.
Bro, is there anything better?
I think it was a collective view, right? Like,
yeah.
We both really didn't understand why Shardul Thakur was playing in that 11, right? Like, does he contribute so much with the bat as well that you would get him in just as a batsman? Because bowling there, like, you can see it, dude. Like, this guy is a god-sent bowler, like... God has told him this is how you'll hold the seam and then sent him to earth.
He's like, look, I've created this sport called cricket and you guys are doing well, okay? But somehow I don't think you guys understand seam bowling. So I'm creating this one guy to come to earth and teach you how to bowl seam bowling. And he's created this, this, let's face it, not very fit looking human being who comes in and bowls so hard, so fast and... with such control over that seam. Bro, he's...
Yeah.
There's nothing better...
Can I just pull up some Shami stats
please,
for you?
Please do, please.
So this World Cup, 2 matches, 17 overs, 9 wickets. At a strike rate of 11.33. 11.33, okay?
Oh, man.
Now... bowling average, 2 matches, 17 overs, 9 wickets at an average of
8.44. Oh my god, bro. That is...
outstanding, man. Outstanding.
And for me...
that is just too good.
One more stat for you, Amar. In overall in World Cups, he's played 13 games and taken 40 wickets, bro. He averages than 3 wickets a World Cup game.
That's a winner for you, bro, right there.
Bro, I mean, someone used to tell me that I've heard this is the batter's, modern day is a batter's game and all that. Bro, 3 wickets a game in the World Cup? Are you kidding me?
And I think if we look at some of those statistics, it might be skewed. Like, there might be some games where he's just bowled like 6-7 overs or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, that's all he needs. And he doesn't take... let me phrase this correctly. Okay, fuck it. He doesn't take shitty wickets, bro. He doesn't take the wickets where a batsman has like tried to hit him and he's caught in like deep mid wicket when it was just going for 6 kind of a thing. He takes bangers of wickets, bro.
Yeah, yeah.
He'll take like the most incredible, like bowled through the gate, or like he'll seam the ball somewhere, batsman won't know where to go, or he'll build pressure in such a, like the Stokes wicket. Like, everyone will look at Stokes and be like, what the fuck are you doing? Which is 100% valid. But the way he set him up for that, bro, that entire over.
Yeah, I really, for that entire England game, I think you can't look at the highlights package. You need to look at the way we've bowled, which I think has been our best bowling performance, because Shami just had Stokes on a string, right? Stokes really did not know what to do, man.
Yeah.
The ball was moving in, the ball was moving away, the ball was straightening, the ball was coming on quick, and Stokes just had no answer. And that's Ben Stokes we're talking about.
Yeah.
Who's like a modern day great. He was completely clueless, played across the line, and what a ball to get him out. It's that, okay, we know that Siraj is not having the best of World Cups, right?
Yeah.
But he's still a lethal bowler. And then you have Bumrah anyways with a new ball. And as I said that, you know, batters would like to play out Bumrah without giving him a wicket to build pressure. But now you're seeing the first change as, like, Shami running in like one bull. and bouncing it right off the seam. Now what are you going to do? Are you going to wait to not give Shami a wicket, and then you have Kuldeep and Jadeja coming in?
Yeah, try
So
hitting
you
Kuldeep.
the balance of try hitting one of those five.
Yeah.
Who are you going to target? Whereas if Shardul Thakur comes into the squad right now, there's an easy fix. Like, okay,
Yeah.
we're going to wait. The way we're going to release pressure is when Shardul is bowling, and we've seen that. Like, it's a clear strategy deployed by teams.
Yeah.
But while we're on the Shami topic, I just want to say one thing, which I don't know if a lot of listeners know. Like, we know he's a fantastic bowler, but he's had some real issues going on in his life. His wife had accused him of raping her, etc., etc. He was dropped from the team. So this guy, yeah, man, this guy was on suicide watch. Like,
Damn.
he tried to take his life thrice.
Fuck, I
So
didn't know
to
that.
come out from that. He's tried to take his life a few times in like between 2016 to 2018 or
Damn.
2019, just after that injury. So he's come out after that. He's set his mind on what he wants to do. During COVID time, when everything was locked down, he's gone in his backyard and like dug a pitch and rolled a pitch himself, and he's just gone and bowled every day for 3 4 hours, just kept bowling, just kept bowling.
And not just that, bro. He bowled with a new white ball. He bowled with an old white ball. He bowled with a new red ball and an old red ball. So like, it's not even like just staying fit.
Yeah.
He's like playing out match conditions in his head in his fucking backyard when he's bowling, bro. So yeah.
Yeah, that's insane. Yeah. And credit to Shami, man. I hope he continues his amazing run in this tournament. But I think with this Indian team, there are a lot of other things to speak about. And Akshat, I want to tell you my man of the series so far, at least.
Okay.
I think he's been sensational in this Indian setup. Ramakrishnan Sridhar.
Okay.
You know who I'm talking about,
You should
right?
tell the listeners who that is. Yes, I do.
So Ramakrishnan Sridhar is our fielding coach, who's come up with this absolutely amazing post-match ceremony that happens within the Indian dressing room, where he gives out these medals for the best fielding performance. And this guy is just so clutch, man. Like, you keep thinking he
Bro.
can't do better, and he comes up with something even more amazing. Just to give you some insight, if you've not watched these videos, first of all, go and watch it on the Indian cricket
Please
team's
watch,
page. They are
like
so fun to
seriously,
watch.
even if you're not following this World Cup, even if you don't watch cricket, whatever, just try to find what Amar is talking. You'll find it on all socials. It's our fielding coach basically giving out these medals, as Amar said, and the way he announces them at the end of the match, he just ups his game every single time. They are the best content coming out of this World Cup, these his videos.
Yeah,
It,
by far,
try to
by
watch them
far.
in sequence if you can, because then you'll see what we're talking about, because it's like a nice ceremony. And then he's like, whoa, fuck, okay, he went big for this. Bro, now he's organizing fucking lighting with the stadium organizers when the stands are empty to announce who's the best fielder of the game, bro. Like, he's doing like Olympic ceremony level like organization at the end of a game to be like an internal
On his
fielding on his
own.
own. That's the thing. Nobody else in the team ever knows what's coming. It's a surprise for everyone. Yeah. Vibes, bro. It's all
And
vibes.
you can see, like, the players are so excited, like, oh, what does he
Yeah.
have now?
Yeah.
And Kohli, I remember in one of the videos, was asking him that, abhi kya finals ke liye helicopter mein aayega kya?
Bro, Kohli, don't give him ideas, bro. That's all I'll say to you. Don't give him ideas. You'll see one fucking Mission Impossible stunt being pulled after the World Cup final. Modi's security will start shooting the parachutes as he's coming down.
I'm pretty sure he's going to get like either MS or Sachin to give one of the medals in one of the games.
Bro, he will
That'll be
get
pretty cool.
MS and Sachin naked on unicycles going around the stadium shooting fucking gold medals in the crowd. Like, I don't know, man. Because if he's upping his game from the last one where, like I said, he basically put on lightings throughout three different stands just to announce KL Rahul as the best fielder. I don't know how you can keep topping that, bro. Like, it's an exponential curve, you know. at one point, he will have to...
I genuinely
don't know what he'll have to do, bro. I'm scared.
Marginal utility will come down.
Something's got to give, you know. Something's got to give.
Yeah. Akshat, I mean, there's a lot that's been said about this Indian team, but I think one of the really important points that should not go unnoticed is Rohit Sharma's captaincy, which I think has been on point throughout this tournament. And yeah, and I especially want to bring this up because I was not a big fan of Rohit Sharma, the captain. I was a huge fan of Rohit Sharma, the batsman, but I don't think a captain should look like that athletically. That was the only problem that I had. But I mean, the way he's making decisions on the field, especially his bowling changes, have always worked. Always picked up wickets when he's got a new bowler in. He reads the situation very well. And another thing that he's done, I think, for this Indian squad is that he has created this whole atmosphere within the dressing room where it really feels like a band of brothers, you know. Even when Shami was out, he comes back and he says that when the team's playing well, I'm happy because whatever the team's doing is important. And that's the kind of attitude that champion teams have, where they're all playing for each other.
Yep, I absolutely agree. Everything, like you said, you know, it's the field placement as well. When to bring in a slip, when to remove the slip, when to go and give your middle over, you know, give it to Bumrah in the middle over, give it to Siraj in the middle over, who to give it to make sure you get that wicket. It's everything, every single thing he's done has been spot on. It's a great performance from him as a captain and as a batsman this entire tournament. It gives you a lot of confidence because when your captain is making the right calls, then you know that performances don't go wasted, if that makes sense. Like, you know that if Shami is having a great game, he's going to get maybe two extra overs to take up that one or two extra wickets. He's created this culture.
And we've seen that longer spells to opening bowlers. We've seen Bumrah come in and bowl a 6-over opening spell at one point.
And shorter also. Because Siraj, like you said, hasn't had the best tournament. And that's fine because the conditions are not really suited to his kind of bowling. He's more of a swing bowler and the ball isn't swinging at all pretty much this tournament. So that game, the last game we played where he brought in Shami early and he gave Siraj just two overs in the start. When we're protecting...
Yeah.
A very small total to have the decision, to make the decision to be like, you know what, Shami, come in. It's a big decision and he gets it right. And then he brings Siraj back when England are in trouble. He brings him back and he's like, hey, why don't you give it a go now? So it's all working.
Yeah.
It's all working. I don't see any weakness in this team. There is one weakness which... boiled my blood last episode. And
very apparent weakness.
Bro. What?
It's a very apparent weakness. And I think everyone are seeing it. And for listeners who don't know, I mean, if you're watching the matches, you would know. And it's Shreyas Iyer. And his ability to play the short ball is definitely a glaring aspect. But just his decision making when he's out there in the middle is just so shocking. So shocking. I mean, you're playing professional cricket for the best team at the highest level, and this can't be the standard, dude. I just hope that he turns it around.
It's the standard because everyone has elevated their game this tournament. Everyone is playing so well. Fucking Surya Kumar Yadav, bro, that innings he played against England was outstanding. It was a difficult pitch.
Yeah.
He had to not be as aggressive as he could, but he still kept his run rate up by choosing what shots to play and what release shots he had.
Yeah.
Great innings from Surya Kumar. And he really deserved that 50. And I hope he keeps a spot in the team, even when Hardik comes back. But, bro, number four is such an important position. We shouldn't be this good with a number four who's performing this badly, but we are.
Bad number four, yeah.
Because everyone is playing so well, right? And he needs to learn to play for the team. I genuinely do not think this guy knows how to play for the team.
He plays for himself. He gets frustrated when he's not scoring and he tries to lash out. And I get that. A lot of batsmen do that. When they're under pressure, they have a release shot, which puts the pressure back on the bowlers. But bro, you have one weakness in your game, which is a short ball. Why is that the ball you choose to play your attacking stroke, bro?
Yeah, exactly.
Wait for the fucking spinner. Exactly. You can come down the track and hit a spinner for a six anytime you want, bro. You're that talented. Do that, no. Why are you waiting for the short ball and trying to hit that one out of everything? You want to show intent to the bowler? Show it to a bowler you can hit. Harsha Bogle has been putting out these tweets on Shreyas Iyer.
I was just going to bring it up. That was the nail. He got it absolutely bang on.
Absolutely bang on.
Go ahead and tell the listeners.
Yeah, I'm paraphrasing here, but he said something along the lines of, you know, Shreyas Iyer needs to just look at the non-striker's end and look at how Virat Kohli approaches a chase. And he says there is no ego in a Kohli run chase. He will give respect to the bowlers when it's required. And he will calculate when he has to hit as it is, right? And he just nails it, because that is precisely the problem with Shreyas Iyer. He plays with his ego. He's like, oh, I'm not hitting. Let me hit one bowler and show them that I can hit. Bro, chill. Yeah. We have 50 overs. You do not have to get out playing an attacking shot in the 15th over, in the 10th over, in the 20th over. You number 4 is the anchor for the team. Babar Azam has played well this tournament. He hasn't got a big score. He's been getting 70s, 80s consistently. His strike rate must be what? 70, 75? Do that. That is what we want from a number 4. Just... Bro, he frustrates the hell out of me, Damar. When we watched that game together, I remember saying that he's going to face 4 more dot balls, he's going to get out. He did exactly that, bro. Exactly that is what he did against England. It's just so frustrating, man.
So do you see when Hardik is fit, when you see Hardik coming back into full fitness, do you see Shreyas Iyer going out, or do you see Mohammad Siraj going out? Because I don't think you can drop Shami now from the two performances, right?
So, for me, I think the choice is between Surya Kumar Yadav going out for Hardik and Shreyas Iyer. I will not touch the bowling right now because they are just on fire. I do not want to break anything which they're doing. Because even if Siraj is not taking wicket, actually he is in middle overs, he's bowling really fucking well.
Yeah.
With the new ball, he's
Pakistan.
Not. Yeah, yeah. But he's keeping it tight in
he
most
games. He got
Babar
Azam out, yeah.
Yeah, that was a huge wicket against Babar Azam too. So, I would not touch the bowling. Like, perfection. The way it is performing right now, absolute perfection. I would like to see him come in for Iyer and then KL Rahul getting promoted to number 4. Because let's face it, he's been playing as a number 4 this entire tournament because he's had to
come
in.
Number 4, exactly.
He's had to come in early because this fucker keeps getting out like in the stupidest way. And so KL was the guy who's like staying out there, building partnerships, rotating strike. So I think he's a great number 4. Hardik number 5, okay, fine. Maybe not the best rotator or strike. Fine, okay. It's valid that you might not want him as a number 5. But I still think that's a better combination for us with Surya Kumar still being in the squad. I don't know why, but I just always feel like giving Surya Kumar a chance because he's that X factor Glenn Maxwell in our team, which, like you said in the previous episode. So, for me, my pick would be getting Hardik back for Shreyas Iyer, but I wouldn't be surprised if he comes back for Surya Kumar either.
And do you see us going all the way?
Oh, for sure, bro. Like, I said this in the last episode, this episode I'm saying the same thing. I still think that Shubman Gill is not even in this tournament, bro. Like, can we put this into perspective that we've won 6 out of 6 games without a meaningful contribution from our number 1 ODI batsman? And I mean, bro, he had Tenguda. Like, fucking, it'll take time for him to get back into the groove and that mind space, I guess, to play a longer
match
innings.
Sharpness.
Yeah, match sharpness is the right word, because he's coming on, he's timing the ball, but it's just the application to like chill a little bit. Let's just keep our wicket
continue
also.
Yeah
so bro when honestly, when he comes in and starts playing the way he has the last 1.5 years, oh my god, bro.
Imminent, right? I mean, I don't worry about Shubman Gill as much, because even when he's been getting out, he's played some really good, whatever, 20-25 run contributions, and he's looked the way he Shubman Gill bats.
Yeah.
I mean, against Pakistan, yeah, those 5 boundaries that he hit, not even a single fielder has moved. Yeah. That's how well he's played the gap. And I think he played well against New Zealand, right? Got the team off to a start. England was unfortunate.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm not worried about the prince.
Yes.
He's going to surely have at least one or two big games in the remaining matches.
Bro, but what's the scene with that nickname, bro? Is he the prince now because the king Kohli is there in the squad, and when Kohli retires, we promote him to king.
Yeah.
That's the way it works, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Just making sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's the emperor, the fat emperor Rohit Sharma, which the phrase hasn't caught on yet, but I'm going to start it. The prince Shubman, King Kohli, and Emperor Sharma.
Emperor Sharma has a ring to it, bro. That's not bad, Amar.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can see him sitting with his crown and like a big gown on like a big chair with like grapes in front of him.
No, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, so yeah, India for me too. I mean, we've been really good in all aspects, and they say bowling wins you tournaments, and just the way we're bowling right now. We've not even mentioned the way Kuldeep and Jadeja are bowling, so.
Legit, right? And those guys are the ones who squeeze the teams. Like, I don't know the exact economy stats, but I think Jadeja has one of the best economy rates in the entire tournament. And Kuldeep also wouldn't be too far behind. He had that one game where he gave runs, but, you know, he's also been pretty much outstanding, so. Yeah, Jadeja is okay. Economy rates.
Jadeja has the best.
Ashwin is number one, but he's played just
3.76.
Yeah, Jadeja number two.
Yeah.
So I mean, if you're not taking wickets, it's about bowling partnerships as well, right? So if you're not letting runs being scored against you, then batsmen will try to hit someone else, and that someone else is going to take wickets. And in the middle overs, that's normally when Bumrah comes back for 2 overs, or Siraj comes back for 2 overs, or Kuldeep is being consistent with the way he picks up wickets. So it's all working really well together.
Okay, too much time on India, but I think we are Indians and we are allowed to be excited about our team playing such good cricket. Let's quickly wrap this episode up. I just want to talk about the other teams in brief passing. Sri Lanka, Akshat made a really good point last episode, which I didn't really think about, which was the future looks bright for Sri Lanka, right? They have a very talented crop of players. I think Hasaranga was a huge miss for them this tournament, just to bring that experience in. But it's looking bright for them, man. Finally, they have some very, very talented guys.
Yeah.
And we'll see next World Cup what they do. I don't want to say much about them.
Yeah, I think they're having the tournament everyone expected them to have, which is few wins here and there. Not really shaking any trees, but yeah, good for the future.
Yeah. Bangladesh has been abysmal. They just don't look like a solid team at all. It's just individuals coming out and doing like things without any coherence. Shakib hasn't had the best tournament, and when your captain and best player is not firing at all, then it's going to creep down to everyone else. Their opening partnership, they still don't know what their best pair is. A lot of problems with Bangladesh, and Bangladesh cricket is actually looking down. I don't see a plan or a roadmap, even with the way the board has been running, that they want to improve. And I think one glaring example of that is that they've not had a wrist spinner for 3 years, and they know that they're playing a World Cup in India, and they've not managed to find and groom a leg spinner in these conditions. So that just shows you the kind of planning that goes behind the Bangladesh cricket board, and it's not looking good for them.
Yeah, I think Mahmudullah is the only guy who can come out of this tournament proud of his performances. Yeah. He's done really
pretty
well.
Happy.
Yeah, but it's always been like a rescue job for him, you know, like the top order has failed. Let me come in and try to scramble together a total. And they've not really been close also in most of their losses, right? Which is really sad. And this very disappointing tournament for sure, bro. It's again when the teams aren't doing well and you start making these comments in the middle of the tournament, like Shakib said that, oh, maybe my whole spat with the meme is affecting the team. Again, you know, when you're starting to reflect on things within the tournament, that just shows you that the mentality, the dressing room, it's just not there, like where it needs
it's
to be.
It's not right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about our last team then. Akshar, do you want to tell our listeners this amazing strategy that I think is pretty much bang on, bro, the more I think about it?
Dude, Netherlands, first of all, like, just, we need to put into perspective, okay, like, what Netherlands are doing. Netherlands are playing cricket, first of all. For people who are listening to this, yes, we are not, we're not drunk. Netherlands are playing the Cricket World Cup. And they've won two games in the Cricket World Cup, okay? They're a team, they're a unit. You know, it feels like everyone bowls in that team. It feels like everyone bats in that team. I don't know how it works, but it just genuinely feels like that.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
The thing is that their opening batsmen, not opening, but like their top order as a whole doesn't perform. But every match they're scoring 260 runs.
At
bro.
All.
Yeah. So my whole thing, I think they're reinventing cricket. So we don't know anything about Netherlands because this is the first time we've seen them, right? I actually think their best batsmen, they're hiding them in the middle order. They're sending their not so good batsmen at number 1, 2, 3, 4. So like, you guys get out, you score how much you can, but basically you'll get out with a new ball when their best
play
bowlers
the new
are
ball.
Yeah, play off the new ball, play off their strike bowlers and all that. We'll hide our best batsmen in the middle order so that when, you know, the fifth bowler comes and the ball's a bit easier to play and the field is spread out, we'll unleash our better batsmen against these teams and we'll catch them by surprise. I think this is a strategy. I might be wrong. I think this is a strategy because, bro, 6 out of 6 games, the same thing happens means there's some thinking behind it, bro. That's all I'll say. That is all I'm going to say. Right
now. Yeah. And from what positions, dude? Like, they were 90 for 6 and you suddenly end up at 230. 110 for 6 against South Africa and you end up at, like, 240 in 43 overs. It was a 43 over rain affected game. So, like, clearly there's something fishy going on here and, like, not a lot of people have caught on to it. Harsha Bogle, if you're listening, I would love that you bring this up in your Crick Buzz and whatever post-match you do. And see what is, like, I would love a behind the scenes on a Netherlands dressing room, dude.
Absolutely, bro.
It'll be so much fun to watch.
There's something going on here. There's something which we haven't caught on to yet.
Yeah. Something shady. Something very shady.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, all jokes aside, I think they've had a very, very good tournament. I'm so glad to see, like, these associate nations coming and playing like this. First of all, how they got into the tournament itself was a big deal. We've addressed this in our previous episode.
Yes.
Coming here, getting 2 wins, huge for them. They still have a fair shot to go and they could, you know, play kingmaker in a way because they have, who do they have left to play against?
They have
Australia, I think.
Afghanistan next, which is a huge game for Afghanistan, right? So that's like a
huge game.
Thing.
Yeah.
And then they play England, which is another huge, because Netherlands versus England is now
Champions Trophy,
bro, it's a European derby in cricket. What fuck, man? That's so cool. That's so nice to see.
Yeah.
But for the Champions Trophy, that becomes a huge, huge, huge game for the top 7 qualification for that tournament.
Yeah.
There's still a lot to play for.
Netherlands are literally holding the key to what English cricket is going to look like for the next 4 years because if they don't qualify for the Champions Trophy as well, I think they're going to have some massive structural changes.
Yes, they will need to. And bro, like, again, let's just step back and look at this in perspective. The fact that they are not last, Netherlands playing cricket is not last, is itself like a huge, 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 huge achievement, man. Fuck. What a tournament for them. Insane.
Yeah. Okay, do you want to just quickly go through the semi-finals, finals predictions? I mean, you've said India, I've said India. Who do you think India meet in the finals?
I still don't know, man. I still... I should probably tell you after the South Africa-New Zealand game, because I think we'll learn a lot after this game, but I still think it's going to be India. The two best teams for me in this tournament have been India and New Zealand. Whether they meet in the finals, I don't know, but I would anticipate that, yeah, that is the most likely final matchup we'll see.
I don't want India to face Australia or South Africa in Mumbai in the semifinals.
Bro, I have so much faith in our team.
Because both of these two teams are so destructive on like one flat track wicket, I'm just scared.
I agree with what you're saying, but I feel like we can match it, bro. Like, I feel like if Gill is in form and Rohit is on a flat track, is just... like, I would match him up against anyone in the world.
In Bombay, in his own ground.
Yeah, Hardik Pandya, bro, his home ground too. He'll come and belt. Surya Kumar is there, then... I don't know, man. I just... I really like our chance. I feel like we can take anyone on anywhere. Of course, like, the thing is, in semis and finals, it comes down to one game. Anything can happen, but I still feel confident, you know, going into any game. I feel confident right now.
I actually think it's going to be an India-South Africa final this time. And let's see how it goes from there.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay. Unless any closing points, let's wrap this episode up.
Tell me your bowler of the tournament and your batter of the tournament.
Oh, nice. Okay. So, I think for me, just the way the execution has gone about might not be in the leading wicket takers. I'd have to say Jasprit Bumrah as the bowler of the tournament. The way he's controlled
in crucial spells. Yes. Yes. I agree with that.
And batter of the tournament, it's hard, man. I mean, a lot of names are out there, but I think I want to go with Rachin Ravindra.
Nice.
Just, you know, not in terms of stats, like he's not in the top of the charts, but a young guy playing his first World Cup, not played a lot of cricket, 23 years old, just to come out and have innings like that against top teams and replacing who? You're replacing Kane Williamson in the squad. So big shoes to fill, huge pressure. Based on all that, I would say Rachin Ravindra has played some magnificent innings.
No, that's a good shout, bro. And left-handers just look better. I don't know why. I mean, playing cricket, their shots look better.
Akshat has one very specific, closet gay. Left-handed ODI batsman only. What about you? Best bowler, best batsman?
Best bowler for me, Bumrah. I think he's just too good. We've spoken enough about him. Best batsman is tough. I really like the way Rohit Sharma has played. He's shown responsibility as well in that temperament game. Yeah, temperament. But just to choose someone from outside India, I like watching Markram bat, bro. There's sense of box office, you know, when he comes out to bat. And for me, he's the most exciting player for me to watch. So yeah, that's my choice.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Okay, awesome. Listeners, if you've reached the end of this episode, thank you. Do let us know what you think of this cricket episode, whether we should be doing more on a regular basis or not. Cricket is well and truly alive because India are winning.
Yes.
And we will hopefully catch you soon. We still don't know if we're going to do another cricket episode or move back to football, so I can't say that yet. But
we'll do one, bro. Of course we'll do one. After semis, let's do one.
After India win. Okay, yes. Done. So, Akshat has put it out there in the universe.
No. I didn't say after India win. I didn't say after... Actually, if India don't win, I'm not doing a cricket episode.
Oh.
It's too depressing. I'll just put that out there now only.
Okay. Okay, so listeners, don't be disappointed if we don't come out with an episode. But, cut to semi-final 16-4 and Shreyas Iyer is batting with Jadeja.
Bye. See you. Nice talking to you. Bye-bye. Nice episode. Wrapping up. I'm out of here.
See you guys. Bye-bye.